This is episode 11 of The Living Reminders with Mary and Blake.
2% doesn't sound like much. But 2% of the entire planet, of every person on it, that's more than the world's 10 largest cities combined. It's 140 million people. And like that, they were gone.
From Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to The Living Reminders. It's a podcast dedicated to the show The Leftovers on HBO. We're still here, and so are you. So let's talk about The Prodigal Son Returns.
Suddenly I'm hidden. It's the darkness of the dawn, and your friends are gone.
I'm your host, Mary Larson.
My name is Blake,
and I fucking love Damon Lindelof.
Right?
Oh my God. What a triumphant episode. I'm literally speechless. I don't even know how we're going to have a podcast tonight.
We're going to have to because there's a heck of a lot to talk about.
And a lot of people are relying on us to talk about this thing. Guys, I'm sorry. That's it. Just turn this fucker off. We can't talk about it.
Well, normally at this point, I ask you what you thought about it, but I guess that's it. You're just speechless.
No. Oh, my God. This is the first time I actually shed tears in a TV show since the Lost finale. And for those of you who don't know me, obviously, through your trials with us via this podcast, you have come to the understanding that I am a total Losty. I can't get enough of Lost. Lost really comes through in my life every single day, probably almost every hour. And during the Lost finale, Mary can tell you this, not only did I cry during the finale, I cried after the finale, I cried going to bed at night, I cried getting in the shower the next morning, I cried going to work the next day because I was that upset. Well, not upset, but I was that overtaken by the emotion of the finale. And I remember going to work and being like, oh my God, bro, I gotta go to work and deal with people in construction sites. And
look at you, you're still verklempt.
I know, seriously, I can't even talk. And I had to deal with manly men. And they're going to see me crying all welled up from the stupid freaking TV show. And that affected me that greatly. But this episode, while not that greatly, it got me. It got me. And wow. I mean, holy shit. What an episode. How about you? What did you think?
I thought it was fantastic.
Really? Because she was withholding her opinion from me. I asked her, hey, honey, what did you think after we watched the episode? She's like, I'm not telling you.
No, I said, I'll tell you when we do the podcast.
Yeah. Well, you didn't let me finish. I was like, I can't tell you until we do the podcast. It's we didn't even have a conversation at all about the show before this recording. So you guys are hearing this as I am, and that never happens. So you'll be just as surprised as me.
I thought it was so fantastic that you're going to hate what I say next.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? What are you going to say?
I feel like the series should end right now.
Really?
Like the show.
No, that's blasphemy.
I know.
All right, well, tell me why you think it should end right now.
Because it was that perfectly tragic and beautiful at the same time.
Okay. Can you amplify on it just a little bit?
I feel like almost all questions were answered, and if not, they were not meant to be answered.
Mm-hmm.
They were up to your own interpretation.
Like you could infer it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so you look at the main family that we have followed, mm-hmm. Kevin's family. I mean, aside from not knowing where Grandpa is, because aside from in the dream sequence, we don't really know where he is right now. Aside from him, everyone's somewhat back together. And you can dream what that means.
If Tom and
Lori are going to end up back at home, or I took Kevin's wish to be that his family would be back together. And that's what looks like is going to happen. However, now it's going to be a little awkward with Nora and a baby.
A little Blasian baby.
Yeah. But, and Wayne dies, and Wayne's whole thing about if your wish comes true, then that means that I wasn't a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are very few things that I feel like went unanswered, and I'm kind of worried about how the show will go on from here.
Ah, okay.
And part of me wonders, is it not going to be in Mapleton? Are we going to see what it's like around the world in other, you know, areas? This is, I guess, set in theory-ish, but this is where I'm just going. You know, are we going to stay in Mapleton? Are we going to move on? Or are we going to see Oakton, you know, or Birchton? And see how they dealt with this, with their own version of the guilty remnant.
That would be a bold move. Because yeah. You've come to love these characters. I remember everybody saying, well, I don't care about the characters. I don't give a shit about who departed or how they were affected by the departure. Nobody cared. And you know what? I don't blame them, because you were thrust into this world that already had all this shit happening. And then all of a sudden you're supposed to care about these people and feel the same way that they're supposed to, but you're just getting to meet them. But by the end of the series, with the context episode that you got in episode 9, you've actually come to understand them.
You love them. You feel like they're your neighbors.
And that's that. And this is why I fucking love Damon Lindelof. I cannot say that any more slowly or pointed. And I'm trying to make it an example.
If we could add emojis to this podcast, there would be the firecrack ones. Possibly the ones with that are multiple hearts, the ones that are meant to be hugs.
Say, I want hearts.
No, you would be the smiley face with hearts for eyes.
Yes, that would totally be
me. That's you.
Nobody.
But do you think this could be it? I mean, do you think they did this on purpose? Do you think that HBO said, you know what? This show's really heavy. How about you make one series, like one season, be possible of being a series?
Well, let me say this. I was just about to say this, and it follows up to your question. Literally nobody on this planet, not even J.J. Abrams himself, the new Steven Spielberg of our generation, writes characters the way that Damon Lindelof does. I'm fully convinced. Lost, I mean, convince me of that. There's just no way around it. But The Leftovers just totally cemented it.
I wonder what it's like to be one of Damon's friends. If you're nervous that he's going to like look at you and be like, oh my God, I can't wait to base a character off of you.
Well, you know, he did base a lot of Jack in Lost on himself in his relationship with his own father. And if there's one person on this planet that I would have confidence in literally changing an entire cast, changing the entire setting, and telling this a different story, but at the same timeline, and getting you to care about those characters, it'd be Damon Lindelof.
So my idea that possibly the next season could be a different town could work with Damon?
Oh, yeah. He would be, like I said, the only person I would ever trust that with. Not even J.J. Abrams.
And I might be feeling this way because I'm seeing a lot of American Horror Story Freak Show previews. And that's another series that each season is a completely different story, completely different era. But it's a lot of the same actors. I wouldn't want the same actors. I love these people. I agree with you. I've learned to love them. But I almost feel like I could move on and meet other people and still kind of figure out the puzzle pieces of what happened on that day when people departed, but get to know how other towns are dealing with it.
I remember you telling me before the finale started, and I'm not trying to throw you under the bus here, so please don't anybody take it that way. Mary was telling me, you know, I'm kind of meh about the finale. I'm not like entirely excited about it. It's not that you weren't looking forward to it, but you weren't like, oh my God, the finale, I can't wait.
I blame it on the fact that there was a holiday weekend.
I want to get into that conversation.
Okay.
But, because there's some awesome territory to mine there. But how has your feeling changed on that? Do you regret that at all? Or do you feel the same way? Is it altered at all?
It's hard to say because I felt that way. I mean, The Leftovers wasn't on, and granted it's on my mind a lot. We do a podcast about it, we write about it, we do all this, but I felt like what I needed from The Leftovers I got in episode 9. I felt like I got to love them finally. Throughout this whole podcast series I've been saying I don't connect with anyone, I'm not cheering for anyone, and I think I finally got to in episode 9. And it's not that I was cheering for them. It's that I felt their pain and I felt their confusion and I understood them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I was needing.
Which was the brilliance behind Damon Lindelof. Again, and not to suck balls here, but...
Ew. Okay. Please don't ever say that again.
No, what I'm saying is, not to blow sunshine, but this guy, they planned it well in advance that episode 9 was going to be that context episode. He knew well in advance what he wanted to do. And he sucked you in, just like how he sucked me in. And I'd probably say half of the viewership in the United States, he sucked them all in by having this flashback episode all the way as like the penultimate.
Yeah.
You know? And then when you finally got that context, you actually got the weight of the finale. You finally got it. And that's why having that episode, a lot of people were sitting there, were saying, oh, that episode 9 should have been way early on in the season.
When did Sylvester Stallone become a living reminders?
And start talking and then fart at the end?
Yeah. Wow.
Well, yeah, a lot of people were saying that. And I got to tell you, they're all dumbasses. They're dumb. You can't be any more stupid for thinking that way. That placement of episode 9 was absolutely vital to the context of the finale. Without that placement there, you wouldn't have gotten it. The one drawback that I find about the finale was that you're right, and this is the territory that I want to mine right now. There was the holiday, and you got the weight of episode 9, and then there was a lull.
This is my other idea. I think that The Living Reminders was supposed to come out in like March.
You mean The Leftovers?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
And us too. We should have started in March. No. But The Leftovers should have been a spring show, mm-hmm. and this episode would have aired on Memorial Day.
That would have been really cool.
So it would have been seasonally accurate, and we wouldn't have had that awkward holiday. Or maybe you would have, but I don't know. I think it would have been different.
But you know, it got people
talking. It gave us time to talk and breathe.
Yeah, I know, but the episode 9 got people talking. It got people excited by the show. People finally cared about it. You had a great succession of episodes, 6, 7, 8, and 9.
I think all of them were awesome. I just hate holidays, and I think that HBO should have just manned up and said, whatever, we're HBO. We're going to show
it. Yeah.
HBO, listen, you know, when it comes back next year, who cares about holidays? Let us watch our show.
I would say besides AMC, HBO is probably the premier content provider in the cable arena.
You can do what you want.
And yeah, they literally have they have fucking Game of Thrones. Okay? That's the second most popular show to The Walking Dead. You can pretty much do anything the fuck that you want.
So if you're on the HBO team and you make these decisions, please don't let a holiday weekend slow you down.
Because what they did was they took all the weight and all the forward momentum that they garnered from episode 9, and they you know, for us, they have people like us. They have the diehard fans. They have the people who will listen to this podcast right this very second. But what they don't have is the casual viewer. They don't have like the pink hat leftover fan. And what they did was they had the holiday. They had the forward momentum, and then the holiday came, and it all went. It just fell apart.
I would almost understand if it was like in the beginning of the series, but guys, just HBO, don't do it.
Or maybe even like a mid-season break. Like, okay, after episode 5.
Yeah.
Let that sink in, and then build the momentum again. You know, like you have the Gladys episode where she gets stoned.
Yeah, do it after Gladys.
Yeah, that would have been a great episode to do it.
Perfect.
Right?
Not after this last one. Anyway, enough of us bitching out poor HBO.
Well, no, don't take it like that. Because
I am.
No, you shouldn't. Because
I just, you know, once again, I'm paying for HBO, and they should just know better. Listen, you don't have to listen to the man. You can play on holidays.
Sure. I agree. But they also put out a phenomenal product. And you have to
took a vacation and they couldn't like press play.
Only thing that may come into the play is the shooting schedule. Maybe they had to delay it, or maybe they had
It was the holiday. They probably like aired some silly documentary or something, or some movie. It was like Frozen for the upteenth time. Who knows?
All right, I want to get into the announcements.
Please.
All right. First, we want to promote this. We want to promote the hell out of this. We're having the mega cast with with the Guilty Remnant podcast, and it is going to be solely fueled by you guys. We're not going to talk about anything unless you guys give us the feedback, give us the emails, questions, comments, concerns. Hey, you want to make fun of us for a half hour? Fine, make fun of us. I don't care.
You are our props.
Yeah, so direct questions to either myself, Mary, Dylan, or Tiffany from the Guilty Remnant podcast, or ask us all questions, or have your comments for all of us. Doesn't matter. But it's all going to be fueled by you. And we want this episode to be a listener appreciation episode. It's going to be a mailbag. So it's all for you. And we want this to be very special. It's going to be published on next Tuesday, September 16th. Okay? So we're going to be recording it, you know, in a few days in advance of that day. So anything you guys need to get to us, please get it to us before the 16th. Okay, preferably by the by Sunday, which would be what, the 14th, because that's probably, I think, when we're gonna record it. So make sure you get it to us, and if you're gonna do it, make sure you mark it with Leftovers Megacast
hashtag. So if you're doing it on Twitter,
you're mentioning it on Twitter, or whatever,
or
Facebook, whatever. The hashtag is hashtag Leftovers Megacast.
But if you decide to email us, just put Leftovers Megacast.
Yeah, just put it in the subject title. Or if you're leaving a voicemail, call our hotline for the voicemail, okay? And then make sure in the voicemail you say, "Hey, this is for the Megacast," because then we're going
to
know.
You have to say it like that, though. "Hey, this is for the Megacast."
Just with a slightly Boston accent, too.
Just slight.
All right. The big announcement that we have for you that we've been teasing now for the past few days, to which I actually gave a teaser, a little tease, actually a few hours before we were recording this. We, the Living Reminders, are going to be having Mimi Leader on the show.
And for those who do not know who Mimi Leader is, please enlighten us.
Mimi Leader was the director of GLaDOS, Solace for Tired Feet, and the freaking finale, Boom, and it's going to be published on Wednesday. This coming Wednesday. So, Mimi, I cannot tell you how freaking awesome this is. She was a fantastic interview, and we're going to be having it for you on Wednesday. So make sure you listen to that.
Yeah, and just make sure if you're not already subscribed in iTunes, just hit that subscribe button, and then it'll automatically be sent to your smartphone device.
So Mimi Leader will be joining us on Wednesday, the director of the finale.
Woot woot. All right, what did we forget from last week? John Hare tells us that we forgot to talk about Bubba. And who's Bubba? He's Nora Durst's dog, seen in the family bed scene and referenced at dinner. Maybe another crazy dog that witnessed a departure. After 3 years, she still hasn't sealed off the doggy door, even after a hug from Holy Wayne.
Wow. You know, I didn't even think about that. That hadn't even come into my mind. But, you know, that is a very valid point. Where did the dog go? Is she still
ran away with all the other dogs?
Was she still waiting for the dog like she was for her family?
No.
Was she prepared? Well, do you think she was like laying out the dog food and everything too?
No,
like,
I don't think so. I think she's just lazy and she doesn't look down. I bet you if I bought a house that had a dog door, I would not seal it up just because I'm lazy. I don't even have a dog.
But what if one of the Carver twins decides to get into your house and tries to open up the doorway that way? You still don't care?
I don't even know how to seal a dog door. That's probably a problem. She's probably going to ask Kevin to do it for her next week.
Let's play Figure Out That Title.
This week's title was The Prodigal Son Returns. Oh, I learned this story in Sunday school.
Tell me the story then.
Okay, so according to the Gospel of Luke, a father gives his two sons his inheritance before he dies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the younger son blows off his fortune. Okay. The word prodigal actually means wasteful, extravagant.
Really?
Yeah. Like you hear prodigal and you think it's a totally different thing.
Like, nope. Like normally you think like, wow, that's actually like kind of special. Like, yeah, wow,
like
cool.
You're like a prodigy or like you're super special. No, wastefully extravagant. All right. So this younger kid who like blew off all of his money, he goes hungry during a famine. Mm-hmm. And then he returns home with the intentions of begging to be employed and renouncing his kinship to his father.
Wow.
Regardless, his father finds him on the road and immediately welcomes him back as his son and holds a feast to celebrate his return.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't care. He's like, oh, you blew off all my money? I'm going to throw you a party. The older son, however, refuses to participate because he says, like, whatever, Dad. I've worked for you all this time and you didn't even give me a goat to celebrate with my friends. He, like, is mad because he doesn't have a goat and his little brother has a
party. Well, I would want a goat, too.
Well, you know, it's tough when you're the older sibling.
You ever have goat cheese?
I love goat cheese.
Goat cheese, oh my God, especially so, fried goat cheese.
Well, the older son didn't even get that.
I bet he would want fried goat cheese.
Oh, that's why he wanted a goat. He and his friends wanted a party with goat cheese. So the dad reminds the older son that everything the father has is the older son's, his inheritance, but that they should still celebrate the return of the younger son. So Basically, you know, it's just the prodigal son returns. It's like, hey, I've been off gallivanting and messed up. Are you still going to take me back? And they do.
And they do. And they give him that forgiveness.
Yeah.
And they give him everything.
Yeah.
Do you think the prodigal son is Kevin?
I think the prodigal son might be the whole Kevin family.
Really?
Yeah, like Jill. Jill messed up. She was like wasteful. She wasteful with her life by joining the GR.
Mm-hmm.
Tom. I mean, can you talk about a more wasteful... Well, he's trying, but he wasted his time with Wayne.
Sure.
And all that Christine, she just ditched him to get on that church bus.
Mm-hmm.
Lori, waste her time. You know she misses her family. And Kevin, God, he's just been wasting his brain a lot.
You see, I take Kevin as the prodigal son. A lot of people have said that Tom is the prodigal son. And I'm not sure if I necessarily agree. Because Kevin never earned anything himself. We already discussed this last episode. He never earned anything by himself. It was always his father's. And then even Kevin says, Dad, you've created a life for me. And look what I've done with it. And you know what he did with it? He pissed it all away.
Oh, he did.
He pissed it all away because he didn't want to be with his family. He said it in tonight's episode. I didn't want to be with them. I wanted them all gone. And look what happened. They all went away. And then he came back home.
Kevin McAllister
style. And
I wish my family would disappear.
And they fucking did. And then he comes back home and he's accepted again. And he has his life. And whether or not it's a good thing for him or whatever, I think he's the prodigal son. I don't know. What do you think? You want to get into the recap?
Okay, let's do it.
It's time to reheat the leftovers.
Now, Blake, you said someone rubbed you the wrong way and you needed to address the tweet.
Oh, my God.
By Ken Lipson?
Yeah. You know, I was debating on whether or not I was going to include his name, but Now that you've done it.
Sorry, Ken.
Ken Lipson, you seriously pissed me off, dude. Like,
okay, don't say that kind of tone to poor Ken.
All right, Ken, you really agitated me. Is that better?
Did Ken personally insult you?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay, what did he say?
A little bit, because you know what? He was a little bit of a coward.
Did he make fun of your accent?
No. People do that every day. I'm used to that by now. Ken Lipson, all right, this was on Twitter. We were having a little bit of a Twitter conversation, and I was actually kind of neglecting some of you guys, our listeners.
Were you having this conversation on our mutual handle, Living Reminders, or was
I was. Yeah, this was a Living Reminders conversation.
So Ken would have thought he was fighting with me?
Possibly, but Ken, I was doing it.
Listen, Ken, it wasn't me.
All right, so Ken Lipson, he goes out and his first statement was, if I ever meet the guy who wrote The Leftovers, I'm going to poop on him.
Ew.
Okay, well.
Who does he think he is, hey, Patty?
That's his personal choice. And he says, thanks for wasting 3 months.
Oh.
Okay, first of all, I have a problem with this statement to begin with.
I mean, maybe it's a sexual fantasy.
Listen, wasting 3 months is not HBO's choice, first of all, if it was a waste, which it wasn't, but it's your choice.
You turned it on.
You turned it on. And I said, okay, hey, Ken Lipson, why was this a waste of your time? And he says, because I didn't get any answers.
Oh.
And then he says, and I said, well, you know, what answers were important to you. He says, I want to know why the departure happened, why they were taken, if they're coming back, yada, yada. And I said, well, but this show isn't about that. This show is about grief. The people who departed and why they departed aren't as important as the people who were left over, thus the title, The Leftovers. And he says, yeah, but I figured out people were upset about 15 minutes into the show. I didn't need 3 months of people being upset. And he went on and on about how he wanted answers and how he was burned by Lost.
Uh-oh.
Okay, now don't, if you want to do one thing, I went through a whole diatribe of how I love Lost. If you seriously want to piss me off, you tell me that you were burned by Lost.
Okay, you know what? I don't think you should be saying pissed off about Ken. Ken, this is my personal invite to you. If you have been wanting answers, and if you are confused at the plot and the reason behind the show, I'm going to welcome you into the Living Reminders listenership.
Well, let me finish this. Let me finish it with this. And when I asked him, okay, well, Ken, how are you? And look, I was having a very peaceful conversation. I said, Ken, why were you burned by both Lost and The Leftovers? And you know what he did?
What?
He quit. He stopped talking. Want to know why?
Because he went to bed.
No, because he's a coward. He didn't have any answers.
Well, maybe he was tired. I sometimes stop talking to people when I'm tired.
No. He didn't have any answers. He couldn't come up with a salient thought. And the one salient thought was, oh, well, what about the dinosaur snakes that made up the smoke monster?
Yeah, well, I want to have that answered too, Ken.
Okay, well, first of all, there were no dinosaur snakes.
Yes, the black monster, kind of like dinosaur-like thing that ate the pilot.
That wasn't a dinosaur snake.
I thought it was a dinosaur too.
But we all both know. Well, we all know that the smoke monster wasn't a dinosaur snake. I don't know how anybody would think,
Ken,
that it was a dinosaur snake.
Don't let Blake talk you down. I thought it was a dinosaur too. It reminded me a lot of like Jurassic Park.
Oh my God. All right. So look, I know this isn't a Lost podcast, but ultimately this is the exact reason why some people just ain't smart enough.
Don't call Ken not smart.
Okay.
I think Ken just needs to listen to our podcast.
They don't understand good writing, and they don't understand the meaning behind the show they're watching.
No, I think
at no point did this show, The Leftovers, ever give any evidence that it was going to either one, investigate why the departure happened, or two, suggest it had the answer. It never once suggested any of that.
I completely disagree
with
you.
And then if that happened, how then could you expect an answer from the show?
Because the whole show is about the departure. So as a viewer, I sure as heck hope if they end up doing multiple seasons, I too want to find out what happened. I can appreciate Ken's thoughts on this. And this show is deep and difficult. And if we didn't do a recap and do all of the work that we needed to do, I might be just as lost as poor Ken. So Ken, I'm standing up for you and for everyone else who has been frustrated/confused. But I'm going to tell you, Ken, if you want to have your eyes open, rewatch the series during the hiatus and listen to our podcast after each episode, because hopefully it'll help shed a lot of light and hopefully you won't want to poop on Damon Lindelof. Unless, you know, that's your thing. Anyway, let's
actually get into the real recap.
Okay. So we start off this episode, the prodigal son returns in the little house where Patty cut her throat.
Oh, brutal.
And poor Kevin's there. What creepy yet, creepy is a good word, shots of Patty just dead.
Oh, no, like that corkscrew effect.
Yes.
You know, coming out. And then I like seeing Kevin's reflection in the blood with the shard of glass that she actually used to
just
cut her throat.
So much blood. I can't. I'm like nauseous.
She probably cut that artery in her neck, right? What's it called?
I don't know. I'm getting like nauseous. All right. Anyway, he calls somebody and it ends up being Reverend Matt.
Yeah, were you surprised by that?
No.
No? You think he wouldn't call him Nora? Like that's who we called before.
Not after Patty's blood all over him.
Yeah, but he remember he called her originally, said, Nora, I fucked up.
Yeah, and she didn't answer. So you know what? You got to move on.
Oh, that's a valid point. That's
lifeline.
A good one.
Lifeline number two. She didn't answer, call Matt. And Matt comes to his rescue in a very fast manner, by the way.
Oh, yeah. He was booking it. He was booking it down that road. He's like, yeah, sorry, I got lost coming off the highway.
And it seems like Kevin already explained everything. Hey, Patty killed herself. I was out here. And Matt's all business. He's like, it's all right, buddy. I'm going to close her eyes and we're going to bury her. I've got some shovels in my car. Now let's dig a perfect rectangle in the ground. This is one of the things that bothers me so much about film because it's so unrealistic. Like, I'm sorry, you guys are not professional grave diggers. You should not be able... Have you guys... You know when you go to the beach and you try to dig like a sandcastle or whatever? You try to dig some sand? It just becomes a circle.
Always.
It is not a nice, perfect rectangle. So why do people in TV shows and movies always magically know how to dig a perfect grave?
It's kind of like the gift thing.
Oh, yeah. When people get birthday presents or gifts, if you always notice, they're always in a box. And they don't... the box is wrapped with a bow. But they don't have to break the wrapping paper. They just lift off the top. And the people separately wrapped the top of the box with the ribbon. So they don't have to break a ribbon or rip the box open. But who does that? Nobody.
Nobody.
You always have to rip the paper and ribbon. And you always have to dig a hole and it's not perfect. So I was really... I was miffed because that distracted me.
What about this scene, though, when Matt shows up and he looks at the body and he doesn't even blink? Doesn't even have like an adverse reaction, like, oh shit, that's a fucking lot of blood, like, whoa, like, or like, did you just do this? Am I really here? He just walked right over, looked at her, and said, okay, let's get going.
Man up, man.
And he's even like, okay, I'm gonna. He goes to touch her, and Kevin's like, whoa, what are you doing? It's a fucking crime scene. What are you doing? He's like, well, you didn't do this. He goes, yeah, but nobody's gonna believe that. I what are you talking about? And Matt says to him, but I believe you. And then he said, and he goes to touch Patty's face and close her eyes. And Kevin says, if you touch her, we'll both be in this. You're in it with me. And Matt replies, well, let's be in it. And at that point, you realize the relationship between Matt and the Garvey family is a lot more than just pastor, chief, or pastor and family. There's something else there. And I wonder what it is. Is it just because he respects Kevin, or is it because Kevin's what used to be a parishioner and Matt will do anything to help him? You know, or is it like the prodigal son? The father takes the prodigal son back and just gives him everything and says, here you go, my son, no problem. And forgives his son. Gives everything back to him without any questions.
You're so fancy.
I know, right? I'm wicked deep, right?
You are.
And like this is like the third or fourth time you said this to me on this podcast. I love this. I feel like wicked smart.
I hope you do.
But
I don't say it really otherwise in our life.
I know. Guys, mark this day down. Mary said that like I'm super smart. You know, Kevin gets accepted by Matt just the way the prodigal son gets accepted by his father. I mean, a father that Kevin now lacks, and he's looking to Matt for that father type figure. Isn't that like? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of like when my parents in high school used to be like, Mary, if you ever go out partying, which we tell you not to do, but if you ever go out partying and you drink or you get high and you don't have a saved ride home, we want you to call us. We'll forgive you because we'll be so proud of you. Now, mind you, I didn't do any of that stuff in high school, and they told me this on like a weekly basis. God, my parents thought I was so naughty. But that's kind of what you're right. It's like something bad happened, but I'm going to forgive you for all of this. I'm not going to judge you. I'm just happy that you called me to help you.
And I'm here. And how about that scene when they finally get Patty outside and they're burying her? Matt gives Kevin the Bible and makes him read Job 23. And I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's kind of lengthy and we're already going way too long in this podcast already. But ultimately, the main point is he's saying, but he stands alone and who can oppose him? He does whatever he pleases. He carries out his decree against me and many such plans he still has in store.
I didn't understand any of this. And I read the Bible in church school. What does this all mean? It was very long. Kevin was emotional.
Oh, yeah. And
I was confused.
And let me finish it. That is why I'm terrified before him. When I think of all this, I fear him. God has made my heart faint. The Almighty has terrified me. Yet I am not silenced by darkness, by the thick darkness that covers my face. Okay. What does this mean? It means God is there, and you may not see him. You may not feel him. It starts off by him saying, if I go to the east, God is not there. If I go to the west, I do not find him. When he's at work in the north, I do not see him. When he turns to the south, I catch no glimpse of him. But he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I will come forth as gold. My feet have closely followed his steps. I have kept to his way throughout turning aside. I have not departed from the commands of his lips. I have treasured the words of his mouth more than my daily bread. God tests people. He tested Job. He took every single thing away from him. But then God rewarded Job. He gave him his life. Job's faith never wavered. And if you remember, when Nat goes to give Kevin the Bible, Kevin says, I don't believe it. And Matt says to Kevin, I don't think she did either. And if you want my help, this is the way that I'm helping you. And then, of course, after that, Matt brings Kevin to the car. He gives him the change of his clothes. And I love the line when he's like, I would have brought other clothes, but my clothes, but we have different physiques.
We're like, so cute.
Like, I love Matt. He's meant to be the serious character, but he has this great comedic relief. He's kind of goofy. Yeah. Like, remember when he says, like, oh, I say fuck too?
Yes.
Yeah, remember that?
So cute.
He says that to Kevin, but he also gives Kevin that water. And I remember what you told me when we were watching
it. It reminded me of a baptism.
Exactly.
Kevin was washing his hands off, it reminded me of those same scenes, those beautiful scenes when Matt was baptizing that young baby.
Yeah, he's washing his sins away.
Yeah.
He's giving him a new life, a new set of rules with which he can play, a new beginning. And where do you find your beginning, at least in Matt's eyes? You find it in God. You find it in God's tests. And this is Matt rewarding Kevin for all of his trials. So whether or not he believes in God, it doesn't matter. He's giving a new life to Kevin. And this is, again, that paternal kind of thing that Nat is providing for Kevin now that his father is no longer there.
We wasn't in this episode at all except for that silly dream.
I know.
Grandpa, where'd you go?
What a great scene, though.
Then we find out what Tom has been up to all this time. He and Christine, they're driving around. Christine is totally out of it, listening to that music that we were hearing in the beginning.
Oh, the Nina Simone music?
Yeah.
Great stuff.
And the baby's crying, and Tom's like, Christine, the baby is hungry. She's hungry. And Christine looks like she just doesn't care.
She is like totally lifeless.
Yeah. She has some serious postpartum depression.
Oh.
I
think she's got more than that.
Yeah. What I didn't like in this scene is the baby wasn't facing the right way. I said this to Blake right away. I was like, first they dig a hole, like Matt and Kevin know how to dig a hole. No. And now the baby looked like she was front facing.
Mm.
And babies, especially newborn babies, are not supposed to be front facing. So Tom and Christine did not read that manual for that car seat. The baby's supposed to be facing backward.
I don't think they bought the car seat and liked.
They probably stole it.
They probably got a Salvation Army or something.
Doesn't matter. They don't come
with a book. I don't think they brought it to the police station
to get it inspected. Oh my God, I was so upset. Blake was literally laughing at me. I'm sitting there going, oh my God, don't they know that baby should be back facing, not forward facing.
Of all the things you could pull out of this entire scene,
yeah,
you say, oh, it should be back facing.
This is how I judge Christine, who we already know is a bad mom throughout this episode, and yet I'm so furious because she doesn't put her baby in the right way.
Oh my God.
Anyway, we'll move on. Jill, Jill's trying to smoke, man. She's trying to be bad, and she's looking at her mom, almost tempting her, like, oh, what are you going to do? I'm wearing black. I'm going to want white clothes, and I'm going to smoke. And I loved it because Meg in this scene was being such a stinker. Meg kept writing, are we still going to go?
Yeah, she's like pushing the issue.
Which, why is Meg all of a sudden the voice of the entire guilty remnant?
Now you're getting into cool territory here.
Like, I like that Lori is now the new Patty. Lori obviously is, you know, the big wig.
But I don't think that she is the new Patty.
Well, people look to her like she is.
Yes. But in reality, I don't think that she is.
No, because she's wavering.
She's wavering. You see that with Jill right away. Remember when Jill went to, like, when she went to go smoke, she took the cigarette right out of Jill's mouth. She didn't want her to smoke.
Well, I remember Meg didn't get to smoke in the beginning.
That's true.
You don't get to smoke.
That's a valid point.
You don't get to wear your white clothes. You have to earn it.
But you could see that Jill affects Lori in a way that only Jill can do. Even in the one of the early episodes when they had the Gladys posters, they were taking them down. Lori was about to take a smoke, and she sees Jill across the street. They don't say anything, but right before she does, she takes a cigarette out of her mouth so Jill doesn't see that she's smoking. And then in this particular scene, when Jill arrives at the GR, and she's sitting right in front of Lori, you could see the confusion and like the hurt, and also the want to talk to her. And she's like, Jill, please go home. Today is not the right day.
It's not safe.
It's not safe. And then Meg turns around and says, well, at least you'll be together.
Meet. Meg, you know what? I'm all set with you, Meg.
Still cannot ugly up Liv Tyler, by the way.
No, and they're trying. They are trying fierce.
Ha, dude.
I think that Meg is upset because here's another pretty blue-eyed brunette. And she's like, I'm the only pretty blue-eyed brunette. You are not allowed.
That's what I expected her to write halfway.
Yeah, like, excuse me. The pretty blue-eyed brunette role is filled in this house.
Excuse me, I'm Liv Tyler, and you're Andy McDowell's daughter. Go pound sand.
Yeah, that's pretty much what she was trying to do. Goodness me. But she just keeps pressuring her, and you're right. Lori was asking Jill, please leave. Go home.
Mm-hmm.
And Jill writes, talk.
Yeah, and what...
defiantly.
What a great put-up-a-shut-up moment.
Well, now, I mean, there was a lot of confusion as to why Jill went. Did Jill go to the GR to be with her mom to get her mom snapped out of it? Or did she go because she wanted to be in the GR herself? And at this moment, you're like, she's there to bust her mom's balls.
I think so a little bit. And I think she kind of was giving her an ultimatum without saying the ultimatum. She was saying, talk. And I think she said that in response to go home. Okay, you want me to go home? Fine. Talk to me. Because you abandoned me, and you are not allowed to forget me. You told Tom in the episode 9, don't forget. It doesn't work in my professional clinical opinion. So, okay, you don't want to talk to me? Fine. I'm going to sit here, and you will not be allowed to forget me. Yes, I gave you the lighter. I gave you that. But obviously, it's not working. So now you got to pay the price.
I'm here, in your face.
I'm here.
All the time.
And then, you know, you have Meg sitting there snapping
so
the whole time.
So rude,
we get everybody watching this conversation. Like, how awkward is that? It'd be one thing if, like, you were talking, but then you're writing that shit. How, like, it's long and awkward. People are coughing in the background. And then, finally, Lori snaps back into her GR mode instead of being in her mom mode, who's concerned about her daughter, and says, all right, fuck it. Well, yeah, it's still going on. She's here because, you know, Jill puts on all the clothes and everything, and she takes her shirt off and yada, yada. And then we begin this freaking epic montage.
Oh, we forgot something.
What?
Can we talk about just a little bit more of the Tom and Christine stuff?
Oh, yes.
Them being in the park, him realizing he doesn't have any money, and she's all freaking out and crying because she realizes Wayne isn't going to. He doesn't think she's special after all.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't blame Tom for acting the way that he did. I can't see what else he could do in this situation.
Well, he was so precious. He was all verklempt, and he's saying, I'm going to take care of you, both of you. I'm going to get a job. We're going to be okay. And you can tell he really means it.
He means it when he says, we don't need Wayne.
Yeah.
And she gives him a, yeah, I know.
And then she says, okay, the baby, I need to go change the baby's diaper. And I knew something was up.
Oh, red flags.
She had the diaper bag in her hand. Mm-hmm. And any mom out there knows, any dad out there knows, you change your kid's diaper wherever the heck your kid is. You do not need to go to some disgusting, dirty bathroom stall. You have the diaper bag, just wipe that butt, take care of the business right there.
Yep.
And yet she walked away with her diaper bag. And I was like, oh, girlfriend's, she's leaving. On a jet plane.
Oh, and ain't coming back, you know, anytime soon.
And then there was that weird, like, church bus of the people saying, hey, are you all right? Do you need help? Do you think she went on that bus?
No, I don't think she went on the bus.
Why not?
I don't think, because she wouldn't be smart enough to go on that bus. She's just dumb.
No, but that guy was asking everybody. He said, I ask everybody, and they all say yes.
Yeah, but I feel like Tom would have seen her walk up to that bus. That bus was parked right in front of his car. He was in his car trying to get something in the middle of her. She had to go to the bathroom. She had to leave the baby in the bathroom, right?
Where did she go?
She just left. She just took off. And by the way, the guy who asked Tom if he was
white,
all right.
White shirt guy?
The white shirt guy. He was on the Cosbys.
Aww.
He played Elvin in the Cosbys.
Oh, that's awesome.
Isn't that cool?
Hey, Cosby friend.
All right, 80s kids. Yeah. I like that. How do you like that?
I like it too. So Christine leaves her baby on the bathroom floor. Why did you leave her on the grass?
It'd be like one thing to leave a kid on your bathroom floor. Like, that happens. But on the public freaking bathroom, we're like...
So gross.
God knows what happens in those freaking places.
Oh, my goodness.
And there's Tom, and he sees the baby. He's like, no, no, no way. He picks the baby up, and it reminded me a lot of what's about to happen of the first pilot episode. Remember when the lady's got the kid, and she's out there screaming, Sam!
Oh, the laundromat lady
the laundromat lady. Tom has the baby, and he is screaming for the mother. The mother, which is Christine. Christine! Yeah. Which is a play on what happened in the pilot.
Oh.
Which is Tom is screaming for the mother, whereas the mother was screaming for the baby in the pilot. And he's carrying the baby. And they ended off, in that scene with just him screaming a name the way the mother was screaming a name in the pilot. Mm-hmm. Cool stuff.
Very
cool stuff. All right, so let's get back to Jill and the GR. Oh, the epic freaking montage of Meg leaving the GR compound and getting into the buses.
Meg's the new honey badger.
No. Meg ain't the new honey badger.
Meg's the new mama hen.
Meg is the new Patty. I don't think she's as smart as Patty. Not yet, at least. But she's got that mentality now.
Yeah, that's what I mean. She doesn't care.
She doesn't give zero fucks a given by Meg.
That's why she's like the new honey badger.
And she takes pleasure in seeing people being fucked up. And she's pushing people. She's ordering people around. And she's even telling Lori what to do, pretty much. And then you have the freaking awesome instrumental of Metallica playing over this whole montage, Nothing Else Matters. And you have that blue kind of filter. Mm-hmm. It makes it look like it's looking through the windows. It's very cold. It's very dark. And it's very sinister. And you see Meg, and all they're doing is just focusing in on her. And as they're focusing in on her, what are they doing? They're intercutting scenes of Patty planning out this Memorial Day.
Yeah.
She's got the clothes. She's laying them out, what you see in episode 8.
So almost saying, Patty can't see this through, so Meg is going to.
Meg's going to do it.
You know what? Meg's trying to have her hair like Patty. She's trying to frizz it out.
It's impossible.
Because it's Liv Tyler. She's so perfect.
Damn you, Liv Tyler. God, I love you so much. No, but then you also see the flashbacks of them getting in the pictures and taking the pictures and then taking out the little packages out of the fans.
It lays it all out there for you if you don't listen to the Living Reminders podcast.
If you're Ken Lipson, you don't listen to the Living Reminders, it lays it out for you.
There you go.
You finally start to really actually put it together that, oh my God, this is what's happening. If you didn't already get that idea from episode 8. And real quick before we move on, I also wanted to talk about the conversation between Kevin and Matt. And the guys, I know we're flip-flopping around here, and I apologize about this, but I just thought about it. Remember in the conversation that Kevin was having with Matt, and Matt was saying, "I believe you. You're a good man."
Yeah.
And Kevin all of a sudden flashes back to his family. And he has the flashbacks from episode 9 of them all at the party and the kids at the school and yada yada. It's his happy times. Why are they doing that? They're doing it because Kevin is looking back at the happiest point in his life, and he realizes, dude, I didn't even appreciate that when I had it. I'm not a good man. I'm not a good man. And it's not because he says he's a bad, he's not a good man to the lady that he banged outside of his marriage the day that they departed. It's not for the same reasons anymore. It's not for the same reasons that, like, oh, I just want more, which why he said he was a bad person. It was because I knew I had it all, and I let it, I pissed it all away. And I think that's what Patty wanted him to realize. I think that's what she wanted him to understand. That his life was good. He did a good life, and he let it get away. The departure helped push that away. And their lives weren't necessarily perfect, but you cannot forget what you were. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that's what Patty wanted him to understand. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that was good.
Thanks. Tell me I'm deep again.
Okay. You know what wasn't good and by wasn't?
No, no, I mean, no. Tell me I'm deep again.
We're moving on. Nora. Nora waking up, brushing her teeth with the same toothpaste that you use.
Yes, it's the Aquafresh, like the super bubbly ones. Like
oh my God.
Oh God, it was great. I saw that. I'm like, oh, that's my toothpaste. I love that.
Nora wakes up and somehow the guilty remnant broke into her house. Why don't people get better alarm systems? If you know the GR is broken into your house, bloody hell, just... Well,
this also confirms the notes that they were taking. Like we had surmised that... Remember the green notepad that we had talked about in the episode 8 that yes. we noticed
that she I was thought taking, they were going to take pee breaks
and poop breaks and everything they had to go eat at Subway.
Yes,
this was they were doing this for everybody, and I think they were following all these people that had departures, so they could obviously do this whole thing with the loved ones. And they were getting all the information, but they were taking the times down when people were getting up, when they were leaving, when they were going to bed, yada yada, so they could get into their houses without any problems.
Oh my God, we were so sad. It was sickening. That shot of Nora cry, like that, like audible sob, like, killed me.
Like holy shit! Like you just saw. Like the thing that I'm afraid of, and the thing that I kind of got from this was, you have all these people that had their loved ones, oh, I'm sorry, that's ironic, that had all their family members or friends or people that they cared about disappear. And then the guilty remnant comes back, makes all the loved ones, and as I put that in quotation marks, and then they put them in the same exact clothes, in the same exact positions, in the same exact places where they departed. So all these people are going into their houses or wherever their loved ones departed, and they're seeing them there again, right?
Yeah.
You have that moment of terror, of confusion, of desperation, of almost hope that, oh, they're back. My family's back. My loved one is back. Here they, holy shit. Oh, no. Because as you close in on their faces, you realize, ah, shit, these are dolls, dude. These ain't right. This ain't real.
So sick.
So
what
not
a sick
only
prank.
It is a sick prank. So not only are they putting these people back, but they're giving them hope that their family's back, and then ripping that hope away again. They're making them relive that moment of terror again.
So sick.
So when you see that face that Nora makes, it's hope, it's fear, it's horror, it's terror, it's confusion, it's anger, it's everything all at once. You know what it reminded me of? You ever see The Godfather 3?
No.
No, you never saw? I never made you watch The Godfather 3?
You probably did, but I probably fell asleep.
Okay, spoiler alert. At the end of The Godfather 3, Michael Corleone's daughter, you think that Michael Corleone is going to get killed for all of his sins that he's ever committed in his life. The problem that he has is that he doesn't get killed. His daughter is the one that gets killed. His pride and joy, the one he loves most. He dances with at weddings and cares and he entrusts the Corleone family trust to and everything. Everything he's done for in his life is for his daughter. And the way that he gets punished is his daughter dies, right? And when his daughter dies in his arms as she's shot for the bullet that was meant for him, he screams out in just that same terror and horror and anger. but they don't play the sound. All you see is Corleone's face, Al Pacino, just looking up to the heavens and screaming this ungodly sound, but you don't hear it. And it was just desperation. And that's what you see in Nora's face. Mm. Like, it was just sick.
What do you think happened to her? So Wayne gave her the happy hug.
Yes.
Did the happy hug... How did this work against the happy hug?
To me, the happy hug... In our interview with Kath Lingenfelter, she said the happy hug was a Band-Aid. It provides some coverage. I think the happy hug probably worked. I think it was true. I believe that Wayne has an ability, but his ability is not all powerful. If you remember in the scene later on when he gets shot and he dies and they find Kevin and everybody at the diner, the guy says, the Atfek agent, by the
Affleck.
Way. Affleck. They say, the guy says, oh, it's just another guy who thought he was God. The only person that is all-knowing and all-powerful is God. You know, whether or not you believe it or not, whatever, in the teaching, God is omniscient and omnipotent. Wayne is neither of those. He may have some ability. He may have a healing power, but it's not fully true, capital T true, in lowercase true. And that's the problem that he has. It's just a Band-Aid. So... I believe that he had an ability, but not one that was fully healing.
And it's done. And poor Nora sits. She goes and she gets changed. I saw her wear a different outfit at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
But you see her in the next morning, sitting at that table, just caressing her child's hands.
Oh, I know. And like the last thing that she says to her children are, God damn it, I said use both hands. In episode 9, that's the last thing she says. And what's happening? She's using both of her hands to hold her children. You know? And I've got a feeling that we're not going to have enough room for listener feedback in this episode. So I'm just going to say this right now. We're probably going to have two episodes for this finale.
Okay.
But because I know where I'm going to go with this, and it's going to take forever.
Do I need to like pour myself a second glass of wine?
Oh, you should probably get a third or a fourth.
Okay.
Because I'm going to get emotional thinking about this. Carrie Coon she deserves every single award that could ever be nominated or given to her by the Golden Globes, by the Emmys, by fucking MTV. This woman has been an absolute treasure for this show. And in fact, I would say without her, it would probably not have the soul or the connection that it's created without her. Her performance upon seeing that fake family, it was enriching. It was enlightening. There are literally no words for what she did. And I know it was aided by the directing, and it was aided by that sound that they had. You know, it was that like that.
It hurt my ears.
Yeah, it was like that very high, tinny horcrux. Oh my God, I made a Harry Potter reference.
You're a wizard,
Harry. Horcrux sounding. You know, that kind of sound?
Yeah.
You could see it wavering the camera. You could see it almost going in and out of focus and pushing back and forth on her. It was almost like you were going to pass out, and that's how she felt. And oh my God, oh my God, oh, it just
then
blew my doors off.
She then starts writing a letter to Kevin, and we do a whole montage at the end where we get to see everything, and it's all voiced over by her saying, pretty much, I thought I could do this and I can't. And I love you and I think you loved me and I need to let you know I'm not doing well, man.
I'm not able to go on.
And I'm a coward.
Yeah, I'm a coward because I can't face up to it. I can't kill myself, but I can't live either. I have to move towards something.
What do you think she was going to do? I think it looked like she had a big black bag. I don't know if she put all of the dolls in there. I was
No, the family, remember she put the kids in the bed.
Oh yeah. So I think she took the husband doll and I think she was going to go to the girl that cheated with her husband, and I think she was going to go stick that doll where the sun don't shine and shoot her finally. That's what I think she was going to do.
You know what?
What?
Hell hath no fury.
Right? And she wanted to do it when she was crazy Nora.
Yeah.
And crazy Nora's back.
Crazy Nora's way back.
And she was pretty much writing. I think she was going to go shoot that girl and shoot herself.
I don't know. I think she was just going to go somewhere. She was going to go somewhere.
With the husband doll?
No, I think the husband doll is going to be left behind.
I think he was in that big black bag.
I don't know. Because, well, the husband doll did go somewhere because they didn't show the husband doll where he was left.
But they showed her putting a really big black bag in her car.
That's a valid point. Either way, what she said that was super freaking poignant was, I can't pretend anymore. I can't pretend like it didn't happen. I can't keep living in the abandoned ruin of a dead civilization. You know, she says that she can't forget her family. She can't just not feel like they weren't there. And she also says something that it happened in Lost. And they made a huge point in Lost. I think it was in the finale, as a matter of fact. Jack says to Desmond, look, there are no shortcuts. There are no do-overs. What happens, happens. This is our life. You can't just think that your life can change and you can all of a sudden move back and change your life. Just because we were in this, you know, sideways, flash sideways, doesn't mean that everything would all of a sudden stop. We lived our lives. This is us. This is real. And Nora says the same exact thing in this show. She says, I took a shortcut. Because I'm a coward. Because I thought I could just get by, but I can't. And then she then takes the thing that Kevin says to her and to the mom that actually lost her baby in the laundromat. Kevin says to them, "We're still here." But what does Nora say to Kevin? "You're still here. I'm not. I can't be here anymore." And maybe the life that I'm pretending no longer really is a real life.
But then she finds a baby.
She does find a baby.
And all of a sudden, it was like the baby gave her what seed of rain created this baby, gave Nora her hug back.
Yeah, a little bit.
Because all of a sudden, she was so giddy and... look what I found. And you always hear this creepy music like... you know, like, it's like you're too happy. You came here to write a goodbye letter. We don't know what, but something bad was about to happen to you. And now it's like, not questioning, hey, Kevin, who put this baby here? But this creepy like, I'm going to take this baby. And I'm very happy. I don't know. It kind of weirded me out. And I really just thought it's because it's Wayne's kid and whatever magic Wayne had is now in that kid too.
Maybe. I think that's a definite possibility. You know, it is kind of funny. Like, if you just pick this baby up randomly, do you think people aren't going to be like, hey, where'd you get that kid? You know, like,
yeah.
You think she's going to get away with that? You know, there aren't questions to answer. And as Kevin's holding Jill's hand, he's not saying anything like, what are you doing in my house, number one? Number two, where the hell did that kid come from? Why are you holding it? And why are you so fucking happy?
Well, Kevin's not talking. He's in shock right now.
Oh, he's definitely in shock. And I wonder if it's because he's granted his wish.
Oh my goodness!
Is he granted the wish?
Let's go back. We're like jumping from wish because whole Wayne thing needs to be discussed a bit. Can we talk about Kevin's ride home with Matt though, and his dream that we didn't know was a dream until the end?
Yes, yes. Oh my God.
Oh. Kevin falls asleep in the car. Kevin just needs to never fall asleep. because weird things happen in his dreams. And in his dream, Matt sends him to the loony bin where he reads the National Geographic from 1972 mm-hmm. with Cairo. And it there's this little note saying, if you stop talking to yourself, you'll get to watch TV, which we assume is from his dad, because then he goes to hang out with his dad who's watching TV. And Patty's there too.
Yes.
And that's when you realize this isn't real. And Patty does like some weird stuff. She like straddles Kevin and tries kissing him and tells him to wake up. But his dad was telling him not to look at Patty. And his dad was telling him that he was a bad guy.
Yeah. It was almost like at the time, well, you weren't really sure that this was a dream sequence. You actually thought that this was happening.
Yeah.
Because Kevin's getting ripped out of the car. He's getting maced by the two people. He's getting thrown into the room. And he's sitting there saying, it's going to be okay. I'm just going to calm down. It's going to be okay. I'm just going to calm down. It's going to be okay. And then, you know, he gets the National Geographic. He gets the note. He's looking at Cairo in the National Geographic. And it's like calling back to that. He gets thrown into the room. And his dad starts talking to him about why he's there. And, you know why you're here. I know why I'm here. It's because I'm a bad man. And all the while, Kevin's saying, look, I'm not supposed to be here. I have a daughter. First of all, a daughter who was abandoning him for her mother, by the way, going into the GR. So anything that he's holding on to in real life, right, that at that very moment, isn't actually real. He doesn't have the daughter. The daughter doesn't give a shit about him. She's willing to go into the GR, mm-hmm. right? She's willing to forsake that relationship at that very moment, at least. And then Kevin's dad saying, shh, you're finally quiet. You're finally quiet. And he says, 3 years ago, we knew. We didn't question why we were still here. We knew. We all knew. I knew. And you knew. And Kevin says to his dad, but Dad, you're a good man. He goes, I am most certainly not. But my head knew, my heart knew, my balls knew, the holy fucking Trinity knew that I'm not a good person. And he says the Holy Trinity, like, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, gods, the gods knew that we were bad people, so they had forsaken us. And then he turns around and Kevin's dad says, don't turn around, Kevin. He's like, he points to Patty, who's off camera, and he says, just stay the fuck out of this. Kevin, do not turn around. And then he does turn around. And to me, when Patty starts saying to him, fuck him, turn around, you can look at me. And then he looks at her, and his dad says, why did you go doing that? And she says, he did it because he needed to get out. And then she straddles him, and she kind of like takes advantage of him almost. She's kind of like almost like raping him, a little bit. Like she's being like inappropriate
she's
with him.
Yeah, she's being very like sexually moving on him, and we don't really know what's going on. It was inappropriate.
And his dad was saying, you need to stay. He needs to stay here. And she's like, oh, is that what he needs? And then he's like, hey, man, you leave with her. You leave with her. And, Kevin's turning around, desperate. Dad, daddy, like, come on, like, you got to help me.
He says, daddy.
I know. And like, it's him reverting back to him being a kid. And he's looking for his dad. He wants that figure. He needs the help. And the only one that's there to help him is Patty. And she says, it looks like we're going to be together until the end. So which makes me wonder if this isn't the last we're going to see of Patty. And she says, you need to wake up. You need to wake the fuck up. She screams it. And I'm also reminded of what Kevin's dad said to him when he's like, I'm a bad man. And this is where bad men belong. So it makes you wonder if Patty really believed Kevin was a bad man. And I wonder if this is Kevin's psyche playing with himself. If the insane asylum is the one connection that he has to his dad. And if he stays in that insane asylum, he's going to believe that he's a bad person. And he's never going to move on. Which the ultimate irony is that the one that's helping him move on and is the one that haunts him most. And that is going to continue haunting him for the rest of his time until the end, as she says, which is Patty. But she's the one that's helping him break out of it. Even though he's already washed himself, he's already cleansed him of his sins, he needs that ultimate motivation to get on with his life. coming from Patty. So is it himself playing with himself? Because he's asleep. He's in blackout Kevin mode. You know? Are these things really happening? Are these the spirits that Kevin's dad had spoken about? Are they finally getting through to him? Is all of this stuff connected? I don't know. I'd like to think so. I think it's put in there for a very specific reason. It may not necessarily be Patty speaking to him, but it's a version of Patty that's speaking to him. It's a, it's from himself.
Whatever it is, Patty's just scary, but she does wake him up.
He wakes up, and where is he?
In the diner.
He's in the car, and Nat's like, hey.
Let's go eat.
Let's get some cheeseburgers.
Yeah.
I'm hungry.
Once again, Nat bringing the comedy relief. Now, is this the same diner? Is this the same place where Patty went to eat with Lori?
Oh, I don't know. And I'm also reminded of like the same place that Kevin went with Kevin Sr.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if it's the same exact place. So if one of our
listeners... Because they're not in the same town. Because when the whole police thing happens, they're like, where are you from? I'm from New York, Mapleton. So
yeah, okay. So they're
from somewhere far away. They're not in the same
town. So I'm probably willing to bet if it's the same place, it could very well be the same place that Patty and Lori went. Because remember, they said they traveled a long way. They had to stay at a hotel.
I would just hope they had like French toast and bacon and stuff instead of just burgers. But then Kevin goes to the bathroom and sees bloody old Wayne.
Whoa. We're skipping a huge whole pot here.
What?
The conversation between Matt and Kevin.
Oh, I know. Well, he tells him that he slept with a woman and
this is his confession. This is that one moment that Kevin has to himself when he realizes, maybe I am a bad man. Maybe I had my whole family. I had everything that I was supposed to have. I wanted them gone. I wanted them out of my life.
I couldn't concentrate in this scene because of Kevin's eyebrows. I feel like he gets them filled in and dyed. They're so black.
They're black and they're
like
big.
Full, and they were so close with these shots, and I'm like staring at his eyebrows.
This was, to me, this episode was Justin Theroux's coming out party. I know you were distracted by his eyebrows, but Justin Theroux, you know, largely known as a comedic guy. I mean, he just killed it in this scene. I mean, it was between the Job scene and then this one. I mean, he...
So emotional.
He played it perfectly. Talking about when the departure happened. Oh, how about when Matt's like, hey, so you're going to tell me what Patty said? Because I'm supposed to help the guilty remnant. I know that's why I'm here. I can do it. You're going to tell me what she said? And Kevin says, well, she wanted me to understand, and she wanted me to understand why I didn't leave.
Matt said she wouldn't have killed herself if she didn't mean that you understood.
She would have made sure you got the point before she shoved that thing in her throat. Kevin says to him, I wanted my family gone. Matt says, well, yeah, there's a difference between wanting and doing. And Kevin follows it up with, yeah, but I slept with another woman. During the departure. And he's like, whoa. You slept with a woman, you were with her
during
the moment of the departure? And Kevin's like, yeah, I was.
It was awkward, man.
And Matt's like, no shit.
What happened?
Really? What happened next? And then you have that heartbreaking scene when Kevin is telling Matt,
he's
starting to sob because he realizes he wants to go see his kids and people are asking him for help. And he's like, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it.
I just wanted my family.
I wanted my family.
And then Lori came home and she was all a little weird. And maybe
she
was
different. Because we were all different. And he sees his kids at the school because he rushes to the school. And they were happy.
To see him.
And then he realized, all I want is my family right now. And then he realized, I started to lose them. And it was all my fault.
He got so cry, he even had snot.
And I know he had like visible snot out of his nose. And
I
Matt
do that
says
too.
Him,
I hate being an ugly crier. I'm glad that he's an ugly crier too.
Matt says, it's not your fault. And he says, it is. It is my fault. And that's when he sees Wayne.
Well, goes to the bathroom and sees Wayne. Here's Wayne crying, sees the blood. Wayne's all messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And Wayne says, listen, man, I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a genie in a bottle, baby. Got to rub me the right way, honey. What's your last wish?
Yeah. He says, make a wish. Do me a favor so that way I know that I'm real, that I was for real. And this is also another thing, too. Everything is pointing to Wayne being for real because he did, you know, it provide a Band-Aid for Nora. Eventually, we find out that maybe Kevin's wish has come true. And he also, Wayne, prophesied his own death. And son of a bitch.
When did he prophesize it?
Remember, he told Nora in the guest episode,
yeah.
Nora, I don't give a fuck about you. I just want your money. And this is your only chance to get my ability because I've seen my death and it's coming. So if you want to do this, right now's the time. Give me $1,000 for the magic fucking hug.
Yep.
And she does it. Son of a bitch, he was right. He saw his own death. And for those of you who are like, well, where the hell did this come from? Yada, blah, 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 blah. Like, where the hell is... It's too coincidental that Wayne was at this restaurant with Kevin, and how did he show up? His blood looked
like ketchup. I thought someone was eating burgers. Like, sneaking in burgers.
Why is he shot, and how did he show up here? There was... As Kevin was falling asleep, he hadn't fallen asleep yet.
In Matt's
yet.
Car.
In Matt's car. He hadn't fallen asleep yet. There's a newscast going on the radio, and the newscast is talking about a shootout that happened in upstate New York in Gilchrist. And the person got away, and there's a statewide manhunt for that person. And guess who they're talking about?
Talking about Wayne, a.k.a. my guts are coming out of my stomach.
So Wayne says, give me your one wish. And then he has this moment of like relief on his face. Like, either he knows what the wish is, or he realizes what the connection is between Kevin and himself.
No, I kind of think sometimes when Wayne uses his superpowers,
mm-hmm.
that it takes away his life a bit.
That's the way that it seemed.
And so, and that's how I feel. The more hugs that he's given, and that's why they're so expensive, because he knows that it's giving away his life,
mm-hmm.
and he gets more and more ill each time as it goes by. What is making him so ill? I think that these hugs and that all of the psychic stuff literally was taking away his life. And when he gave Kevin that last wish, he died afterwards.
Yes, he did. I mean, obviously he was shot, so that's helping it.
Yeah, but I think it took what little bit of life he had left.
Yeah, and sucked it right out of him.
Just to give him that wish.
So the affect shows up. They put both of them on the ground, and then you see Kevin staring into Wayne's face. And Wayne is smiling as he dies. Blood's coming out of his mouth. And then you get confronted by the Atfec people talking with Kevin about Wayne. Matt comes to his side and says he has done nothing wrong. He's the chief of police. And the chief says, and the guy from Atfec says, Chief, go back to Mapleton.
Why did you think he was smiling? He was not smiling.
No, he smiled. He was smiling at the end. Remember?
He just had, that was blood dripping out of his mouth.
No, he was smiling as he died.
I hope not. That was gross.
As his face kind of hit like the stall wall, he was smiling.
When he fell on the ground?
No, when he fell on the ground, but when he...
Oh, when he was still in the stall.
Yeah, when
okay,
he was still in the stall.
Okay, I can handle that.
Okay, yeah. When he hit the ground, he looked like a fish.
Yeah, okay.
Like, that was it.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And then Kevin doesn't let the ADVEC guys know that he's a chief. Why didn't he tell them?
No, well, he did tell them eventually, but he eventually says, well, yeah, I mean, I was off duty, and I didn't really think it was important to tell you. But what important information did we get out of this interaction? ADVEC guy says to Kevin, did he tell you anything about Russia?
Oh, good thing you clarified that, because that sounded like so quick and soft. I didn't understand it.
Yeah. Okay, so we don't know a freaking thing about Russia whatsoever. Like, not at all.
This is the first time we've heard about Russia.
Yeah, this is the first time we've heard anything about it. So something happened in Russia where the government is concerned about it. Probably something with national security. Probably him going to Russia to help save or help heal somebody that they need to know about or whatever.
Then he asked, did he touch you?
Did he touch you? So that means the government knows that his touch...
His magic hugs.
...affect people in a certain way. And they're trying to narrow it down. Maybe they might even know that his ability may be a little bit more than just touch related. So they're trying to narrow that down too. That's a possibility. I wouldn't be surprised.
It surprises me that they would do a shootout for him if they knew he had some magical abilities rather than doing some tests on him.
Well, we all know that in that pilot episode, they went into his compound fucking guns a-blazing.
Atvek don't care.
Atvek is honey badger. Mm-hmm. And they went in there with the intent to kill. And even the Atvek agent that was speaking to Kevin in one of the earlier episodes, hey, if you want, we can just get rid of these people. Always in Gladys. If you want, we can just get rid of all these people. We'll just wipe them out. And that's what they do. They wipe out all of these cults because they have no problem and they have no time for any of these people. Just get out of my life. I'm done with you.
Speaking about the guilty remnant, goodness, when Matt and Kevin are coming back late at night, they almost hit two guilty remnant people who are running away with one of those loved one dolls. And there's the mom. There's the mom from the pilot episode who lost baby Sam.
Oh, yes, there she is. And
waving
she's
a huge gun.
Freaking gun-toting, upset mom.
And she's going to shoot Kevin. She's like, you don't get it, man. You don't get it. Do you know what they just did? Do you know what they're doing?
Mm-hmm.
And she's pissed off and she runs off with the rest of them. She's like, whatever. I'm going to the party. The bonfire.
And he's begging her to put the gun down. We'll talk about it. Let's figure it out. And she's just so enraged. And can you blame her?
No. I can't blame her. I can't. Matt then looks over and he finds Meg. And Meg's like, whatever, man. My face is busted, but I'm still gorgeous because I'm Liv Tyler.
And she smiles. And she has that fucking smile that Patty had. Remember when she fooled Kevin that day of the dance?
Yes.
She has that same vindictive, like, screw you. And Kevin unties her. He's like, what did you people do? And she writes down, we made them remember. We made them. And you know what? They did. They did exactly what they were meant. What they meant to do.
There was this little tear that came down, though, when she was first looking at Kevin, and I don't know if it was a pain tear, if it was a happy tear, a sad tear. I didn't know what it was. Yeah. It was pretty.
I don't know what it was.
Maybe it was sweat. Who knows? But you're right. Meg is the new Patty. She does not care. And then Kevin ends up seeing that. Shit's hit the fan. There's a lot of cars all parked, and they're all parked on their way to the cul-de-sac where all the guilty remnant live.
Yeah.
There's a huge bonfire, and people are punching guilty remnant members left and right.
I mean, they are pounding these bad boys everywhere, and all the GR just catching fucking beatings everywhere, and the cops aren't showing up. They don't want to help.
Fire trucks can't come because the roads are blocked.
Yeah, but that's bullshit too, because we know
they don't want
the fire trucks. They fucking find a way to get wherever they gotta go.
Oh my
go.
Gosh, when that shot of Mayor Lucy when she's like, you were right, Kevin.
My God. And she is just,
she is
dumbfounded.
Yep, completely. Kevin's buddy, the police officer there, and he tries to update him on the situation, and Kevin, bless his heart, he's like, give me a gun. Give me a bulletproof vest. As if any of that's going to help you. You have these mobs of people who are so upset that they're coming out of their houses with their loved one dolls.
Yeah.
Throwing them to these bonfires, mad as hornets, and all of the guilty remnants' houses are on fire.
The whole complex is just burning to the ground. This is already in mid-siege. People have lost their freaking minds.
And their lives already.
Yeah. They've lost everything. And all they know what to do is just to go to the GR and take it out on them. They've snapped. They've literally snapped. They've become the feral dogs that have been plaguing that town from the moment this happened. And you know what? This was a ticking time bomb. It reminds me of Breaking Bad. Remember when Mike was telling Walt, spoiler alert, that Walt, you are a freaking mess. You are going to get yourself into a problem, and you are a ticking time bomb. Just tick, tick, ticking away. And I'm not going to be here for the boom. And that's what Mapleton, and I'm sure the rest of the United States and the rest of the world was at this very time.
Yep.
They were ready to just fucking explode. And that's why Mary Lucy says that to Kevin. Remember in the pilot, she says, Kevin says, no one's ready to move on. People are just ready to fucking explode.
Yep. And here they are.
Son of a bitch. That's what happened.
Off to Kevin's left comes Lori being dragged out by some guy, and Kevin jumps into her rescue once again, knocks the guy out, and he starts saying to Lori, it's okay. It's okay. You're safe.
Yeah.
And she's grasping with her voice. A, she's been in a burning building, so she can't really speak.
But she hasn't used her voice in months. In 8 months or 9 months or so.
And she finally speaks.
Yep.
And says, Jill, and points inside that burning building.
And then you see Kevin be like, fuck.
Oh my God. This is when I got emotional. And what beautiful, beautiful directing.
Yes.
As he's entering this hot building and he slides into, it's kind of like that Tom Cruise Risky Business slide, slides into the house, and he's screaming for Jill. You can't hear it because there's the music, but it's the Max Richter beautiful haunting you don't need string
it.
Music.
It's saying all of it. The music is saying it itself.
And he's looking and he finds a brunette that has the same exact freaking hairdo as Jill. Are you serious? It's like the Jill stunt double. Probably was. He keeps looking for her. There's that weird guy who's in his zen, like, yoga pose.
Yeah, and he's just getting burned.
Yeah, he doesn't care.
Honey Badger don't care.
Seriously, this is the Honey Badger episode. And he runs upstairs and he finds all these people lying down. So were they just kind of caught surprised? Were they locked in this room? Like, why were all these people on the floor?
I think all these people got their shit kicked out of them.
Oh.
And then they said, and people were like, screw it. We're going to burn the place down with all these people in it. And they're going to die from that. So they get all the shit kicked out of them. They were probably knocked out. Then you have the smoke on top of all of that. So they're inhaling the smoke. And they're just probably knocked out.
Gotcha.
So, and then I like how Kevin was like, screw everybody else. I don't care about any of you. I'm just getting my daughter.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not helping anybody else out. Like
Well, they signed up for this. Jill is so young. She signed up yesterday.
And she
This morning, more like she did it. And she has no idea. She's there to more make a stand against her mom.
Yeah, she thinks she's being like an angsty teenager, which she kind of is. But she has no idea what she's getting herself into, which says something about Lori a little bit. You're not supposed to have a familiar relationship. I get it. But you do have a maternal instinct. And I guess she was battling with that a little bit. She battled a little bit with it. But then you have the new Patty, which is Meg, sitting there beating down her neck.
Yep. Keeping her in line with the guilty remnant.
So she said, screw it. You know, whatever. Okay, fine. I'll do it.
I loved these shots of when Jill starts breathing and Kevin's looking at her and she's fine. And then later on when he's giving her some oxygen with the fire truck and Lori walks behind them. And you can see Jill looking at her and Jill has the oxygen mask on. And Kevin looks at Lori. And I didn't know how to interpret his look. The first time I saw the episode, I took it as, thank God you both are safe. This was terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
But the second time I saw it as hatred and disappointment in his wife.
Yeah, what were you thinking allowing this girl to be in this?
Allowing, bigger than that, why did you allow this to happen?
Yes, okay, that's even better. How could you do this?
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
Yeah.
How can you
be okay with this? You knew this was going to happen. This was your plan. How could you do all of this?
Yeah. Better yet, was it worth it to you? Is all of this, everything that you're seeing here, is it worth it? All the work that you've done, the way you wanted to make people remember, is it worth it to you? And I wonder if Lori feels the same way. You see that look on her face when she sees Kevin and Jill. Jill's okay, great. Kevin rescued her. What have I been doing? I've been pissing people off. I've gone into their homes. I've exacerbated this whole situation. In fact, I catalyzed this whole situation. I've put not only my daughter at risk, but I've put my husband at risk. Or at least her ex-husband, whatever. Mm-hmm. The only people that have ever really cared about me, I've put them at risk. And I wonder if she still has this. I wonder if she now has the same feelings that Kevin had. Shit, I had it made. And I went down a path that, son of a bitch, I don't think I should have gone down. I joined the GR when I had it made. And all I want now is the safety of my family. I think I screwed up. And I wonder if she's going to try to go back to Kevin and try to make amends with him.
I think after seeing Tom, she seemed so lost. She went, of course, to Memorial Park and saw the statue of the mom losing the baby.
Mm-hmm.
And that weighs on her. And that reminds her. That is her reminder.
Yeah.
And to know that she carries that cross by herself and no one even knows about it. Mm-hmm. And then she's overlooking the water. And I was wondering, is she going to try to end her life?
Yeah, she's just going to step into the water.
Or is she going to walk and find a bridge or something? Like, she is just so desperate and upset with herself for everything. And then allowing her daughter to almost die. And then her long lost son comes up.
Yeah.
And takes her hand. Yeah. And that was beautiful.
Yeah, it was, you know, he takes the hat off like, oh, shucks, Ma, I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, I need help, Ma. But like, you know, he takes the hat off and he sees her and she sees him. And it's an acknowledgement of family for the first time. Mm-hmm. So is that an indication that she's given up on the GR, that she has realized, I made a mistake. I shouldn't have done this. And that's where she falters, where Meg doesn't. Meg gives zero fucks. In fact, she's happy that this is all happening. She smiles about it. And she's, we made them remember. You know? That she's like vindictive, almost like Patty was. And this whole thing, the whole bloody scene, and I don't mean that in an English way. I mean that in a very American way. The bloody scene that you just saw at the GR complex with all the houses being burnt, all the people being beaten up. It was a perfect way to show how people snapped. And I love what the show did with the moment of the loved ones. They could have went down the path of just like having everybody, you could have seen everybody's reaction, right? You could have seen everybody's seeing the loved ones. And you almost did a little bit. Like they showed the guy with the cart at the laundromat.
Yep.
You know what I mean? They actually showed a guy cleaning gutters. What Kevin told the other person. He's like, "Oh, what were you doing?" Oh, the told the lady at the laundromat. He says, "Oh, what were you doing when the departure happened?" He's like, "Oh, I was cleaning the gutters." And so they actually show a guy cleaning the gutters that departed.
Oh, yeah.
They show a guy doing the yoga. And it's like time is standing still.
I was so confused because of that yoga thing. I was just like, oh, some guy's like really...
Oh, wow, cool.
Yeah, getting down with yoga.
But they didn't need to show all the reactions. You saw Nora's reaction, and that was enough.
Yeah.
That was the worst one. And that was enough to show that. And then they go from that directly to this unbelievable scene of fire and brimstone and hell and Kevin literally stepping through hell to get his daughter out of hell to bring her back into safety. I thought it was a perfect show put on by Mimi Leader and Damon Lindelof and Tom Parada.
Perfect.
Like literally perfect.
I agree. And that's why I know people are going to hate me for saying it, but if the show ended right now, I would be okay with it.
And how about Kevin walking with Jill? Do you think the relationship between Kevin and Jill is repaired, or do you think it's just on the way to be repaired?
Oh, I think it's repaired. When you go through a life-altering experience like that, it definitely needs to be repaired. And the dog.
Yeah, so now this is my question. Did Kevin get his wish fulfilled?
Yes.
What was his wish?
Maybe his wish was as simple as I want my daughter home. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was I want my family back together. I think it had something to do with his family in one way, shape, or form. And I think he got his wish.
I feel like the wish that he made was, I want a new beginning. I want a new life. I want my family back. Now, maybe it's not his real family. Maybe it is a facsimile of his family, but he's getting something. You see the dog come back and it's a normal dog. You know, it's finally tamed. Remember Dean used to say, these aren't our dogs anymore. I'll bet you a dollar that you can't tame that dog. And then there it is. It's tamed. And then he has Nora, who loved him, and he loved her. They were willing to admit it. They have a new baby. Well, she has the baby there. And
so weird.
And she's happy. It looks like her grief. It looks like her pain. It's not that it's gone, but she's accepted it and she's moved on. She can't forget. She doesn't want to forget. But she's got something to live for. She's got something to look towards now. And she has that. And now so does Kevin. and it's all come together in a world where, hey, maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe he's got his final wish and maybe it can finally work for him. I don't know.
Oh man. Do you have a sudden theory of the week, Blake?
Well, let me just say this. I know some people were probably disappointed with this ending and I get it. It didn't answer a lot of the practical questions.
Like where did everyone go?
It didn't answer where it went. It didn't really talk about the voices that Kevin Sr. hears. Are they real? Are they not real? You know, is that like that whole scene with Kevin and his father and Patty, is that real or not? You know, it doesn't really describe the National Geographic. It didn't answer those questions. What it did was it took us on a ride. And it took us on a ride that made you care about the characters. It was, it made you think. I remember Kath said, this show is meant to make you confront reality, confront the world as it is, and make you believe in your life. And that's what it did. And whether or not you're willing to accept that or not, that's your problem. And if you wanted to go along with these characters and go along that journey, the answers to whether or not The Departed, where they went, when they went, how they went, what the National Geographic, it's all ancillary, really. I mean, it pointed to some things, it pointed to some mysteries, but the importance of the story was the characters themselves. And that's why I think some people who didn't like Lost will not like this show, because Lost was about the characters. And ultimately, that's why Lost grabbed me so hard. And that's why The Leftovers has grabbed me so hard. That's why I shed tears in this finale. I literally was weeping that whole time Nora was reading that letter, because it was real. It was real. She was saying she was a coward and son of a bitch. She was. And I felt it. I really could believe her as she was saying it. And then as she was writing her farewell letter to Kevin, there she is experiencing the kind of catharsis that Wayne couldn't provide for her. There was the kind of catharsis that only she could go on with, because she had to realize it. And then as she's writing her note, she's going to drop it off to Kevin's house. There he shows up with Jill and this new, maybe modern family of his. And this was a perfect finale. I cannot say otherwise. How about you? Any final thoughts?
I loved it. Yep. I loved this episode. I think that I might have changed my stance on your theory, your huge theory that the people who disappeared were unwanted, mm-hmm. or not unwanted, but inconveniencing or whatever, that the people just didn't want them around for a while, mm-hmm. and they were gone. Reason that I'm taking this back is in regards to two people, Neil and Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Neil is Patty's ex-husband who Correct. Kicked her out of the house.
Or at least the ex-boyfriend.
Yeah. Neil didn't want Patty.
Yep.
So why didn't Patty disappear? And Kevin fully admits he wanted his family to go away.
Yep.
And his family didn't disappear.
But they did, though. I mean, not literally, but they did.
But they...
He paid an even worse price in my eyes.
He did, but...
His family disappeared when they didn't disappear. They made choices.
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying, if you base it solely based upon people who want... who find that someone's just not what they want in their life right now,
mm-hmm.
I'm finding it hard to stand behind that idea.
I get you on that one. Yeah, I get you. I understand where you're coming from.
Thanks.
Well, how long are we into this episode?
I don't even know, because it doesn't show time. I need to change the settings, but we need to wrap it up.
Okay. So let's just wrap this up, and we'll say this. I promise you guys, we will have all of your feedback. What do you want to give the day? What, Friday?
Sure.
We'll say Friday. We'll have all your feedback on by Friday. So for all of you who thought that you have lost the time or the ability or you missed out on the deadline to get your feedback in, is even though I said that there was a deadline, you're in luck because I lied. There is no deadline. Well, there is a deadline. Let's call it Friday by 7 o'clock. Thursday by 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time.
I have rehearsal on Thursday.
Whatever. We'll figure it out.
Anyway, just send us your feedback.
So send us your feedback by Thursday night. And as long as you do it by then, we will have it all in there. And we'll have a whole episode dedicated to just you guys and your feedback. And maybe a few more thoughts from Mary and I on this phenomenal finale. So let's do the final sudden theories of the week. What do you
season.
Got?
Season.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's. What do you
sudden
got?
Sudden theories of the season.
Go ahead, kid.
You go first because I need to think still.
My sudden theory of the week/season is this. We have not seen the last of Patty. Ann Dowd is coming back. I guarantee it. She is going to haunt Kevin for the rest of his time.
Oh, goodness.
And I think that's going to be the inner conflict he shares and the inner conflict that motivates him for season two. Much like how his father hears and sees people, he will do the same exact thing and he will hear and see Patty.
Ew, ew, ew. Oh, my goodness. Even though I love the actress. Okay, I'm ready for mine.
Okay, what do you got?
I think that next season is going to show other places in addition to Mapleton. They won't exclude Mapleton.
Okay.
Because we're too invested in these people now.
Yes, I agree with that.
But I think we're going to get more of a world, if not U.S., but hopefully world approach as to what is happening post-departure.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know more about these other cults. I want to know what is going on in Russia. These other people who think they're God, there's a lot more people out there other than just Mapleton.
Oh, how about those people that showed up in episode 9 driving past Kevin? We're like, hey, are you ready?
Yep.
Like, where are those people? You know, where's that coming from?
We're gonna be expanding the Leftovers world.
I think you might
series.
Be right on that. That's
the
a good
season.
One.
Thank
that's
you.
That's a very good one.
Thank you.
Please hang up and try again.
All right, what do you say we close out the show?
All right. Well, thank you so much for all of you for listening. As Blake said, we would love to get your feedback. You guys know the drill. There are many ways to reach us. Head on over to our website, thelivingreminders.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Okay, just search Living Reminders. You'll find us. And you can also just shoot us an email at thelivingreminders@gmail.com. Head on over to our website. Leave us some voicemail. We love our voicemail feedback. And if you feel so inclined, please, 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 leave us a rating and review on iTunes. It goes a long way. And we truly, truly appreciate it. So don't worry, we are going to be having your listener feedback later this week. And we also have our super special episode with the director of the finale, Mimi, coming up. So stay tuned, folks. I'm Mary.
My name is Blake.
And you've been listening to The Living Reminders.